welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 433 for Wednesday, the 21st of January, 2015. I'm Dave Neal, welcoming you all into 2015 after Harry's solo show last week. A superb effort on his behalf and one that saved us a little bit of time this year. And really, welcome back, mate. Thank you for last week. Sorry I couldn't make it. Martin's busy, Jim's busy, Jules is busy. Sterling job, mate. And back to the Harry and Dave show this week.
Yep, back into it. Good to be back doing it. You know, after having a month break, doing it solo was a bit of a shock. But yeah, we got through it in the end. And luckily there wasn't too much news last week, so we could kind of just ease through, catch up on the email backlog we had. And now we're pretty much up to date with everything, so we can, you know, really get swinging into this year.
Yeah, it was worthwhile doing, and as I said to you, I just sent you the message after I'd listened to the show. I was at work on Saturday, and a couple of lads had left the department, so I put it on. And, I was conversing with you as you were talking, so you weren't literally on your own. You know, we were having it was kind of a one-way conversation as I was listening to you, but, yeah, sterling effort, mate, and on behalf of the rest of the presenters, thank you very much indeed for doing that.
Happy to.
Too good. God help the day when I have to do that.
it's easier than you'd think. But anyway.
Okay. I'll look forward to that time when I have to do it. Hopefully it'll be a long time in the future.
Exactly. Hopefully there will always be someone free.
We would hope so. Yep. But yes, onwards and upwards into the show. My first one of 2015. A belated Happy New Year to all the listeners. Thank you for joining us again this year. Listener feedback on that side of things. It's been a little bit on the slow side this side of New Year. I know you covered a lot of it off last week. John Bright's email being one of the main ones that we've had this year. So TZ John being in touch as always. Listener feedback should always be sent to motopod@motopodcast.com. That goes to one and all of the hosts. So any questions you raise, I know it's a quiet time of year at the moment, and this tends to pick up once testing and the race season begins. But if there's anything you'd like us to try and add to the show, or any ideas, or any positive ideas, if you don't mind, save the negative ones for maybe later in the year, but certainly the positive ones to have a go at first, please. motopod@motopodcast.com.
Yep, do be sure to send that in, and we're now caught up on emails, so chances are your email will get read when you send it. So feel free to ask anything. Hopefully we can answer it. If not, hopefully we can find someone who can.
They always get read. It's just a case of how quick we can get to reply, because most of mine come through to my phone. So I'll always read them, but I just don't always have the time to reply. So pretty much when they get sent, they arrive pretty much straight away. But it's just finding the time to reply. As a little bit of a subject for listener feedback, if you so wish, we had a question in from @adenahay87, Adam Denahay. What three rules would you change in MotoGP, including Moto2 and Moto3, if you could? So all of a sudden you become Carmelo Ezpeleta or people of that ilk and that sort of high ranking and the border people at Dorna. If you could change three rules in MotoGP, what would they be?
Yeah, that's a bit of a tricky one. We've kind of had that question floating around on the old Motopod show document for a while. And I've been trying to have a think about it for a while. And to be honest, I still don't really have a solid answer. I think that reducing the engine size and electronics in MotoGP would be two of my three rules. And then the third rule would be bring back qualifying tyres. There, those are my three.
I like it. We're only just picking up on the show, and I'll have a think about that. I'll put mine in for next week.
Well, yeah, hopefully the listeners will send some in too. That email address, again, is motopod@motopodcast.com. So next week we can find out the litany of ideas from my users and from Dave. Well, listeners, not users. Anyway.
I'd like to make one rule change that Casey Stoner has to return. You've got all the best riders in the world. You might as well put them all in together. I think that should be one of the rules. But no, we'll do it properly next week, or whenever I return to the show. If it's not next week, maybe the week after, we shall see. Into the news for this last week. It is still a little bit quiet on that front.
Yeah.
Nothing really going to kick off until February with the MotoGP testing and a little bit more World Superbike testing and the launch of World Superbikes anyway. But on the World Superbike front, there's been a couple of private World Superbike tests this week, but they've been rained off or been too cold. The Factory Kawasaki team and their new Monster sponsorship, they were unable to test. Honda and Ducati have all suffered. Many of the riders have been on social media and posting pictures of their rides and their wet weather gear and going like, this is great, but really, we're not all that bothered about going out. Thanks all the same.
Yeah.
There's nothing really to be gained. They all know how to ride. I mean, it's a little bit different for Johnny Ray making a step from Honda to Kawasaki, but you know, they did the test pre-Christmas. So it's not as if he's just waiting to get onto his new bike. And with Chaz Davis and Davide Giuliano, they've ridden Ducati already. So it's just getting things in place for 2015. And they're not really going to lose too much sleep over missing a couple of days early season testing, I would suggest.
No, probably not. I mean, the rule change in World Superbike, bringing it closer to a stock machine, seems to have affected Kawasaki the most. They seem to have been doing a fair bit of a tweaking to their engine, which they now can't do. So there was some talk that, you know, that Kawasaki was struggling a bit with some of that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, Sykes has been riding that bike for a long, long time. As you say, Johnny's pretty new to that bike. But he seemed somewhat positive on social media with the couple of laps he did get to do on the bike.
Yes.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think that the whole rule change in World Superbikes will actually be a fair bit bigger and bring things a bit closer than people seem to have suggested. You know, there was always those rumours of Team X and Team Y are cheating because their chassis isn't the right set, isn't the right specifications or whatever. It's not the stock chassis. So, yeah, hopefully we'll see even closer racing in World Superbike and it not just be Aprilia and Kawasaki fighting it out.
That spectre of frames affects every series.
Mm.
Whether they're stock frames or whether they've got extra bracing, whether they're just a little bit on the not quite legal side, that's always one of the finger pointing exercises of a lot of series. But again, bringing it closer to stock is it works in BSB, you know. So, and then obviously the next step with the control ECU as well, it's bringing things all onto a more level playing field and trying to tighten the loopholes, as we've said before, with Scott Smart being in there and Gregorio Lavia. It's basically the pit lane police, I suppose, that they've not really had before.
Yeah, and I think that bringing it closer to stock not only helps to keep things fairer, but it also helps to differentiate World Superbike from MotoGP, which I think is also important, you know, in terms of trying to get more fans to both sorts of races and to grow both series.
Yeah, it's a production-based series, isn't it? So the closer you can keep it to stock and into the production style rather than just being the silhouette. I know a lot of people like the thought of having an exotic factory Yamaha like the R7 that they had with Noriyuki Haga and the factory Ducatis and the factory Kawasakis and Hondas. And they weren't what you rode on the Monday, were they? Win on the Sunday, sell on the Monday.
No.
And if you can do that, and these are the bikes that people are buying, and sports bike sales, I believe, are on the up slightly, if I remember correctly, I read?
Yeah, it seems like that.
You know, and so that's what people want. If that's what they can see, and it's as close, well, that's pretty much the bike I'm going to buy. I know, obviously, there are some differences, but they're going to have to be because they're race bikes. But at the end of the day, the bikes are as close to as production as you can make them. And that's what World Superbikes is always about. It's production racing.
Mm, yeah, so as I said, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And yeah, obviously they're never going to go full stock because then you wouldn't have the stock 1000 class, but definitely a slight reduction and maybe just more fancy bolt-on bits, less changing internals is maybe where World Superbike needs to go. Because as you say, the whole win on Sunday, buy on Monday thing maybe got a bit far away from that, you know, during, I guess, the golden era of World Superbike when things were, you know, pretty trick.
I mean, you could buy an R7, but it would have cost you the best part of £27,000 or something stupid. You know, it was proper factory Exotica and on a limited numbers. So, yeah, it's. You know, I'd like to see it a little bit closer. Like you say, you've got the stock series anyway, which really is just take the lights and number plate off and strengthen the engine internals. But speaking of World Superbikes, it looks like Max Biaggi could be back in action at Phillip Island.
Yes. That,
how cool!
That yeah, that's the rumour. So, as I mentioned last week, BRG and Laverty are testing for Aprilia. So BRG has been out testing some MotoGP electronics. He had a bit of a crash, but he's all okay. And yeah, now the Italian Superbike press are saying that, yeah, BRG could be back either at, you know, around like San Marino or Imola, or even as soon as Phillip Island, which would be, yeah, pretty cool. You know, love him or hate him, BRG is a very exciting racer to watch. He certainly adds that, you know, that villain aspect to any series he joins, and, you know, he does create excellent storylines. You know, him and Rossi in GP, him and Melandri in World Superbike.
Him and everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it does spice things up just that little bit.
And plus, you know, he's not going to turn up just to make up the numbers either. He's going to rock up wanting to be on the podium.
Yep. And it was a pretty consistent rumour through all of last year that, you know, oh, BRG was going to be at round X, round Y. So, you know, it does seem like he wants to be racing again at his tender old age. So, yeah.
Excuse me? Careful.
I think you're younger than BRG.
Not by much. I'm 42 now. I have aged since the last time I came on the show.
This is true. but still younger. So, you know, there's still hope for you. Getting that first win at Donington, maybe it'll happen.
yeah, we'll see.
so yeah, that'll be one to watch. In more World Superbike, Phillip Island news, it looks as though Troy Corsa's BMW squad could miss the first two rounds, as they don't have any money and therefore don't have any motorcycles. And motorcycles pretty important when you go motorcycle racing.
Almost as important as money.
Yeah, almost. So yeah, that's a real big bummer for that team.
That's been knocking on since November, hasn't it? That it was mooted that they were going to run the team and they were going to do this, that, and the other, but there's been no mention of a title sponsor. They're looking at the BMWs, but there's no real support coming through from BMW Motorrad, it seems. And the fact that like you say, that there's the bikes haven't arrived and there's no money to pay for them anyway.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a disappointment from the former World Superbike champion's point of view, looking to put a team together for that, which could be a pretty successful deal. You know, he's got the contacts and he's got the know-how.
Mm.
And I think he'd be a welcome addition to the World Superbike grid. But without money, you ain't going anywhere. And that's the same at any level of racing.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things we'll have to wait and see. It seems pretty certain from what I can read that they won't be at Phillip Island for sure. So hopefully they can sort out something and be at rounds past that, because, you know, that's a bad deal for teams, for riders, for fans, for everyone. But yeah, so hopefully Troy Corsa can get everything sorted out, and we do eventually see this air quotes BMW squad at some point. Continuing on with the whole Phillip Island theme and a bit more recent Phillip Island news, the Phillip Island Classic is going on as we speak, which means that the wonderful Phil Hall is on the ground. So we'll have probably about 2 to 3 weeks worth of Phillip Island Classic interviews for everyone coming up. So yeah, those always seem to go down pretty well. I'm sure that Phil will get some excellent interviews. There's almost all the top TT races there, and a lot of older Australian races. So, you know, a nice diversity of interviews as always.
Very much so, yeah. One of the staples of Motopod are the Phil Hall interviews, when he gets chatting to the racers and you can hear the bikes in the background. It's with it all being quite open at Phillip Island. It's always a joy to listen to what Phil Hall brings in on that. So with people like John McGuinness down there and Jeremy McWilliams going down to kick the Southern Hemisphere's ass at the Island Classic, looking forward to seeing what Phil brings back from there.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll be as good as ever, and then Phil should also be there for the Phillip Island World Superbike round, so hopefully he can get an interview with BRG after BRG wins both races.
We did talk about that beforehand, didn't we? Yeah. Before we came on the show, and that would just be that. Yeah, that'd shake up the stand. I wonder if I could put him in my fantasy road race team this year, because usually that's pretty shit, my fantasy road race team. So, yes, that'll be coming along shortly, I would think, as well, for the 2015 season. So I will hand in my wooden spoon on to somebody else.
Yep, hopefully. In more winning news that's not really motorcycle road racing related, but still motorcycling related, Mark Comer won his fifth Dakar rally. The Dakar seemed as crazy as ever this year. There are a lot of photos on social media of, you know, guys arriving with only one handlebar and having to do the throttle off just a wire, basically. So, yeah, that seems pretty crazy.
That's some hardcore racing, that.
Jürgen van der Groberg, that's it.
Yeah, Jürgen van der Groberg. Jürgen van der Groberg, as he was christened, because he's about 6 foot 12.
Yep, he raced in the Dakar this year. I can't remember what place he came, but he raced and I think finished the Dakar. So, good for Jürgen.
Yeah, but he isn't he like a little bit on the crazy side anyway?
Yes, I think that even by...
From what I gather, from what I remember.
Yeah, even by motorcycle racer standards, he's a bit out there. And from what I can gather, it does seem like you have to be pretty out there to do the Dakar.
Oh, no question. No question. It's not something that... I've never done off-roading, so I don't know. I don't know if it's something that appeals to me or not. It's I'm a little bit too soft for that.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Not quite grizzled and rugged enough, I don't think.
No. And if people want to do something that's slightly less dangerous than the Dakar, in the show notes we'll include an excellent interview with Hervé Poncharal, Tech3 team boss, an interview on Crash.net where he talks about the current situation in Moto2, and that's quite an interesting interview. Obviously, as a Moto2 manufacturer, Tech3 have an interesting view on it. So, yeah, be sure to give that a read. You might not agree with everything he says, but it's certainly interesting to get a bit of a different perspective on that.
One man not shy of pushing his opinion forward.
Yes.
And rightly so, certainly, in this day and age.
Certainly. Certainly, Hervé is very forward.
Brent Gladwin of Team WD-40, the Sheffield-based British Superbike team, they've announced Jack Kennedy and Taylor McKenzie as their BSB riders for 2015, along with Joe Irvine and Tara McKenzie on the Stock 600s. Jack Kennedy coming back from World Supersport with the Simon Buckmaster team, returning to the British Championship. He departed a couple of seasons ago as runner-up in the British Supersport Championship, lost out by, I think, 2 points to Glenn Richards in a really tense finale at Brands Hatch.
Both of them broke down, didn't they? Or both of them crashed or something?
Yeah, both. Yeah, one crashed, one broke down. Glenn Richards crashed and Jack Kennedy had a machine problem. And I think I've said this on the show before, one of the most poignant scenes I think I've ever seen in a British Superbike paddock was Jack being helped back to the awning, literally being carried by two of his team, by Andy Jameson and one of the other guys, and just he was distraught. I've never experienced anything like that. He was absolutely beside himself because it was out of his control. Very similar to Chris Walker in 2000 with Neil Hodgson. You know, all he had to do was finish. Mm. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. So it's good to have Jack back. One season with Riva Moto and one season with Simon Buckmaster, as we said. I think he'll do well this year. The kid's got talent. Be interesting to follow. I think he's certainly top 10 material in his first season, I would suggest.
Yeah. It will be interesting to say. He did pretty okay in World Supersport, especially in that second year. He was, you know, up there in the top five, certainly towards the end of the season. So, yeah, I agree. I think he can do well. McKenzie on the Superbike's a bit of a surprise for me.
Just a little bit.
You know, he never really set the world on fire in British Supersport. And when he was in 125 GPs, he certainly didn't set the world on fire. I mean, he was on a pretty old bike.
Yes.
But, yeah, that one came as a bit of a surprise, but I guess they're keeping it a family affair with his brother on the Stock 600.
Yeah, Taz's second season on the Stock 600, and bringing in Joe Irvine, making the step up to the series, as Jordan Weaving is as well. So the two protagonists from 2014 set to carry on their rivalry into 2015. That's going to be some series to watch this season. There's some new guys coming in, a lot of young blood and some testosterone-fueled 17 and 18-year-olds going at it, hammer and tongs. It's going to be, it's going to be good fun to see. And with the added interest, Mason Law, signing for Russo Racing as Jordan's teammate, he's got a bit of experience with him, and he also brings in Andrew Pitt as his mentor. So the former World Supersport champion on that side of the fence as well is going to be some good fun. There's going to be some bar banging and some fallings out and some issues in that series this year. I can sense it already. So yes, well, that's going to be hard work if you're the manager of one of the riders.
At least every weekend will be exciting for you.
Oh, yeah. These are full of piss and tatty-watter, these boys. It's all part of the learning process for them. Yeah, it's going to be a series to watch, most definitely. Speaking of a series to watch, the MotoStar Championship, just to touch on that, it extends to 22 rounds from 12 in 2015.
That's a lot more.
It is an awful lot more. The only two rounds where it doesn't go to, that they don't utilise the second race, for some reason, is Alton Park. So the Alton Park round in May and August just have the one race, the rest all have two. It's a bit of a stretch. I don't understand what they're driving at with that one, because trying to keep costs down and trying to make it an affordable series, they've pretty much just doubled the costs.
Yeah, and
certainly for consumables like tires and brake pads and fuel and things like that.
Well, especially because you can't rebuild a four-stroke in the same way you can rebuild a two-stroke if something goes wrong. So for all those Moto3 boys, that's, you know.
The Moto3 KTMs, I don't know what it's like for the Hondas, but certainly for the KTMs, they're on 4,000-kilometre rebuilds.
Yeah, so that's just doubling the amount of distance that they're running and doubling the amount of chances for some mechanical failure, so...
Yeah, which I don't quite understand that. Obviously, the series directors, obviously, they've got a reason for doing it, and it certainly adds more with it being prototype racing. We don't see too much of that. So, yes, if it brings more coverage and it gives the kids an extra chance, then so be it. And, you know, it's good for them. But thinking from a costs point of view in an already relatively expensive series, it's just going to add to especially as well that they have the KTM RC 390 Cup coming in as well, backed by Santander. There,
it does
seem
a bit odd. And because it's not like they're trying to like mirror another series, because any series that runs Moto 3 only runs one race a weekend. So, does Sev run two races? Maybe Sev runs two races.
I don't watch it often enough to know, but it probably does run two. And if they're mirroring that, then it's obviously the way forward. But it just seems with especially being a part of that paddock for the last season, I know how tight funds are for a lot of the teams, but obviously they've agreed to it, so maybe it's good for everybody's in the same boat. And then obviously the RC 390 Cup as well.
Yep, the RC 390, very attractive looking motorcycle. That is a good motorcycle.
It is, isn't it? And they've listened to the teams as well, and they've sort of refined it a little bit from the initial bike that was on display at Alton Park in August. Mm. You know, they've sort of put more race in. The bars were a little bit straight on them, and it looked like a little bit like a, you know, a smaller version of like a CB500 sit up and beg. It wasn't particularly race orientated. I think they're dropping the bars a little bit and trying to make the position a little more race orientated. So they're listening to the customers, and that's another one that's going to be worth looking into. And if they've got the right people on it, that's going to be another. The season's shaping up well, certainly from a British perspective anyway, from what the championship races are looking at. So we'll be bringing you plenty of that in the shows to come across the season.
Yep. One thing from a British point of view that's maybe not looking so great is the Circuit of Wales.
Oh.
Their kind of debacle drags on.
It does.
There's now a public inquiry going to take place in March to effectively deregister common land that is affecting the start date for the circuit. So, you know, this has obviously meant that construction can't start. The World Championship is obviously going to Donington this year. But now, because of this and, you know, because of just the other things that go along with trying to build a circuit, it looks like maybe Donington will have it for 2016 as well.
I think that's most likely. The longer it goes on, obviously, the less likely it's going to be. But I think they need to put contingency plans in sooner rather than later to be able to secure the British Grand Prix for the following year. Because we really don't want to miss out on the only chance of seeing the best riders in the world on our shores. And I think there's no better place for it than Donington Park, personally. Silverstone's a great track and the riders like it. It's fast, but from a viewing perspective, it's just pants. So it really is. You know, it's an F1 track. You're so far away from the action a lot of the time, unless you stood at pit lane exit at turn one. Or you can get into amongst the crowds at the complex of Luffield, Woodcote, that sort of neck of the woods. But Donington, you're right on top of the action. You can see 30, you know, sort of 50-60% of the track from most points. And it just access is an issue that for Donington always has been, always will be. We've been stuck in that car park for 3 hours at previous British Grand Prix there. So I can speak from experience that it's not the easiest place to get in and out of, but it's worth it for the action and for the circuit itself.
Yeah. And hopefully the Circuit of Wales can come together. I don't know. Whenever you're building a new circuit, it always seems like there's going to be a lot of dramas that go along with it. especially
unless you're Aragon and you build it two stops from nowhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can do what you like.
Exactly. So yeah, this will definitely be one to follow, I think. Yeah, hopefully it doesn't just end in disaster.
I hope not. I mean, it from what you look at the plans and you look at the mock-up of it and the model of the circuit, it's going to be something massively impressive if it does go ahead and it does come to. It's going to be something that the UK race scene can be proud of. But we just need to get it built. We need to get that first sod of earth turned and turn it into something like COTA and Aragon, something like that, you know, our version of those two.
Yeah, and speaking of COTA, COTA did have some troubles. Obviously, it had legal disputes with Kevin Schwantz, and there were also some building troubles.
Yes,
when that was coming along, and you know, it came out pretty damn well.
It's a huge undertaking, isn't it? It's not just, you know, there's the infrastructure, there's the local job front, and everything. There's a massive effort to get something of this size off the ground. So they're always going to be, like I say, they're always going to be teething troubles and issues and everything else. But you just think that the signing for it before they'd even got all this out of the way. I know it's plate spinning, isn't it? Do they get all the planning permission done first at their own cost? Or do they get Dorna's permission first, which then pays for it, which then pays for the planning, which might or might not happen, or it won't be ready on time? So it's a massive civil engineering undertaking. So it'd be it's one of those that we'll have to follow that closely and see what comes, especially from March, which are the news of which we will bring you on the show.
Yep, definitely.
One more thing, one more item of news that we do have that came out yesterday.
Potentially as shaky as the Circuit of Wales.
Yes, potentially as shaky there as, and as tenuous as it becomes. The TT World Series, the Isle of Man government are looking for a promoter to drive the prospect of a TT World Series that will culminate at the Isle of Man at the famous TT races in early June. It's been said that the potential tracks include the Valencia Street Circuit that F1 use, Porto that the World Touring Cars use, but not the likes of the Northwest 200, Macau and Ulster GP, as they are races in their own right and probably wouldn't want to carry the TT moniker and have themselves branded on the back of that as their own standalone successes and races in their own right. But trying to bring everybody together, your McGuinnesses, your Guy Martins, both your Dunlop boys, Gary Johnson, people like that, into a global series of street races.
Seems a bit difficult. A bit like herding cats, as they say. Seems a bit difficult. A lot of those people are generally TT racers. Lots of them aren't really too fond of the PR and
exactly.
Structure.
A huge amount involved with that and a lot more traveling and the cost and more cost for the teams as well. In a sport that's already short on money in a lot of cases, to basically up the costs. We've got the press release that came through. And basically, it said the Isle of Man TT Chiefs are actively seeking an independent promoter for the TT, Classic TT, and a proposed new globally branded TT Road Racing Series. So what they're trying to do, with the interest that they've had in the marketing side of the TT, certainly over the last couple of years with North One Television and ITV4 in the UK and the broadcast rights that have come with the TT, looking to take that onto a global scale, which... to me, that seems all right, but the TT is also a niche within a niche, isn't it? Motorcycle racing is a niche sport, and then you've got niches within that is road racing.
The other issue is that, you know, the TT also has a lot of opposition in terms of people who think it's dangerous and who think it's unsafe, so I don't think that's...
Unfortunately, that's road racing in general, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Because of the nature of the sport, it's not as safe as circuit racing. You're always going to have the naysayers and the voices against. But as we've covered on the show previously, nobody holds a gun to these boys' heads to go out and do it. They do it because they want to. And if they want to, then they should be allowed to. Mm. But as you say, if you're trying to put new circuits together, and certainly Valencia Street Circuit, which is very, very similar to Macau, with the Armco line in the circuit itself, is, I mean, it defies belief. I don't know how they're going to come around to that. It's something that, again, has got legs in it and something that will roll on and on, I think. But it just seems an unprecedented step Another one of part of the statement came out was, we believe that it has a huge untapped global commercial potential, and on behalf of the Isle of Man government are looking to identify a promoter who shares the government's vision, will develop the event to the next level and deliver enhanced commercial value to the island. So what's the reason behind doing this? Is it money? The commercial side seems to be the main drive behind it, not the fact of getting the guys out there and going out to different places to race. There has to be a return for them.
Yeah,
for going out there.
I guess the Isle of Man government obviously hopes that it brings more people to the TT, since the TT would be, as they say, the culmination of the whole series. So they hope they can, pick up some Spanish and Italian fans and whoever else, I guess.
Yeah, I saw the figures that were in one of the releases that said that it brings in 48,000 people to the island for the TT fortnight. I mean, the Isle of Man is an incredible place. It's beautiful. You see the footage on the TV. Not yet somewhere I've had the chance to go. I've got the chance to go this year, but unless I can get the time off work. I've got a room booked already. I just need to get the flights across there. Whether I make it across is another story, but hopefully we'll see nearer the time. But it's a truly gorgeous island, and they're looking, obviously, for filming opportunities to bring in different variations. But is a global series the way forward? Maybe you guys have got an idea on this, and if you look into it and see what you think, and, would you welcome street races in the States and the chance to see McGuinness and Guy Martin and the Dunlop boys, people like that, over on your shores? Or, I don't know how far they want to take it, whether they want to take it to Australia, to America. The two circuits mooted at the minute have been Valencia and Porto. Obviously, they can't go to Macau because that's its own entity. So it's certainly an unprecedented step, and not one that many people saw coming. But whether that promoter comes forward and they can bring the money in remains to be seen.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd certainly be interesting to see. A TT World Series would be very, very different to a MotoGP series, I think.
So. Oh, without doubt. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd like to see it, but I just think that the actual infrastructure and the way of putting the whole thing together is going to be a massive undertaking. And it also, they were looking to run it in the off season to the main race series. So looking to go from sort of November to April, and obviously you have to have a break for the Northwest 200 in end of May, and then you go on to the TT. And what they have said is that the champion will be crowned at the TT. They won't be able to win it prior, so that it does culminate at the TT. Whatever happens, the winner will be crowned at the TT. You can't win it the race before, so you don't have to go to the TT. You have to enter every race to stand any chance of winning it. So they've got the basics in place. It's just the actual infrastructure and the logistics in general.
Yeah. Yeah, as you say, it'll be one to watch. I personally, as I said, think it's a bit of a pipe dream. I think that it's one of those things that, it'd be super to do, but realistically, I can't really see it happening. It's because, teams would have to front all that extra money to, send bikes and riders to those extra races, and would they gain anything more than going to the Northwest, Macau, Ulster, and the TT? I don't know.
And what are you going to bring in from the branding side of things? Is there going to be that much sponsorship and funding coming in through branding? And people, obviously, whether these circuits want to pay to host these events, that there'll be some kind of offset for expenses for the teams, which is great. But I still see them fronting the bulk of the transport costs. Yeah. Not really thinking out loud. I don't know that for certain. That's just my opinion on things, which is why we're here in the nicest possible way. Yeah. I'm happy to be wrong, happy to be corrected. So if anybody knows a little bit more on the story, feel free to get in touch.
Yep. So once more, motopod at motopodcast.com or at moto_pod on Twitter. I think that's pretty much all we have for this show.
Yes.
We'll be back next week with a proper look at testing ahead. So hopefully there'll be a bit more information about what's going to be at Sepang 1. It might be a bit tricky because Sepang 1's usually a bit more of a shakedown test, and Sepang 2's a bit more new parts, that sort of thing test. So,
Just nice to have motorcycles going around in circles really quickly. Just nice to have some track action of any description to give us something to talk about.
Exactly. And worst comes to worst, we can talk about the Supercross, because that seems to be a huge drama recently.
Yeah, I even actually caught a bit of that as well, because I'm not big onto the dirt, but I have been trying to keep top side of things, and you really can't miss what went on last time out.
Yeah, so. If any listeners send us emails about the Supercross, maybe we'll talk about it, but for now, I think that's a show.
I think that's a wrap.
Okay, well, we'll catch everyone next week, and see you then.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Harry.
Yep.
Can you stop moving that cursor around?
Sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, as we both sit here during the show, we're both looking at the show notes and we both have access to the live document. And all I can see is Harry's little marker going round in like a square as he sat there.
I was just moving it
talking
around.
To me, and he's tapping away on his keypad, and this little blue thing is going around in a square. And as he's talking, I'm watching this, and it just keeps moving around, saying, Harry Lloyd, Harry Lloyd, Harry Lloyd. Well, so excuse my distraction, listeners. Pack it in.
Sorry, Dad. It gave us an outtake, so it's fine.
Do carry on. Excuse me a sec. Does somebody just pulled up outside my house?
No worries. Hopefully you don't get taken in a van, and this is... the last things we ever hear of you.
Oh, I know. It's okay. Let me just see if he knocks on the door. He's got a new car. There's a friend of mine who's just dropping me a diary off, but I don't know if he's going to knock or if
he's
just going to drop it through the letterbox. So excuse me one second.
No worries.
I wasn't expecting him, so.
It's cool.
I'm just going to wait and see if he... I've just closed the blinds too a bit. I don't know if he's going to knock. Is it a big one or is it going to... What's he going to do? He's knocked. Right. Can I call you back?
Yeah, sure.
Not for long, mate. All right.
No worries.
Cheers. Denny Smythe interrupting our first podcast of the year.
Okay.
Good.
Sure. Sort
of. He didn't know about the outtakes at the end, so I've just explained to him where the outtakes are. So, Denny, if you're listening to this, welcome to the outtakes. And thank you for the diaries you've just dropped off.